What we're seeing is exactly what the Taliban had promised. They wanted the election disrupted.
We examine why and how that is taking place in Afghanistan. This is Thursday, October 18th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. You are part of this program. Why don't you join us by tuning into VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, the already tense relationship between China and Taiwan is about to be strained even further. We have a preview of the upcoming Invictus Games. And across the globe, families are getting smaller. All on today's VOA Asia. We open today's program with a look at the upcoming Afghanistan elections. A candidate in Afghanistan's upcoming parliamentary election was killed Wednesday in a bombing attack on his campaign office, according to officials in Afghanistan's Helmand province. Omar Zawak, a spokesman of the governor of Helmand, said Jabbar Karaman was killed in his campaign office in an explosion that also wounded several others. A doctor in the emergency hospital of Helmand said two people had died and six wounded. The Taliban has claimed responsibility for the explosion. Earlier this month, the insurgent group announced it would try to derail the elections and had ordered its followers to attack those participating in the process. We welcome to VOA Asia Akmal Dawi of the VOA Afghanistan service. What is going on in Afghanistan as we approach this election?
So what we're seeing is exactly what the Taliban had promised. They wanted the election disrupted. They had warned there would be more attacks on the election process. They had warned that they would be targeting both the voters and the candidates, and they are doing that. They have killed almost 10 candidates so far in different parts of the country. And they have also warned that on the election day, which is this coming Saturday, October 20th, there will be even more attacks.
So why would anyone try to safely go out and cast their votes?
That is the idea, but the government of Afghanistan has been calling on the people of Afghanistan to defy the Taliban threats, because the Taliban would actually paralyze the country, that the Taliban are a terrorist organization and they shouldn't be depriving them of this constitutional right and opportunity to make the future of the country, to make the country a better place for everybody. So people are taking the challenges, people are defying the Taliban and on their lives taking really, really serious risks and go about this democratic exercise.
How did it get to this level? Things seem to go up and down. In fact, the situation in Afghanistan has been going up and down for whoever is involved in confrontation there over the past how many decades or whatever, even 100 years or so. Why does this keep happening in Afghanistan?
Well, the reason is there are multitude of reasons why the situation in Afghanistan is such a mess. Starting with the invasion of the country back in 2001, the way the United States approached and desired to rebuild Afghanistan without the Taliban, and then the intervention by countries like Pakistan that harbors the Taliban, and also other players including Iran and Russia. So there are too many problems actually to say that's the only reason for the situation in Afghanistan. And let's not forget that the United States toppled the Taliban regime that had control over 90% of the country, and ever since refused to engage the Taliban in any state building or post-Taliban arrangements that have been put in place. So now that's an insurgent group and is fighting for its cause.
Now, the United States, there had been reports anyway that the United States was trying to get the Taliban involved in some kind of negotiations. What happened with that?
The United States has been saying that it's pursuing peace in Afghanistan for many years, actually. But what is missing is practical action that you would see on the ground, that, okay, what is it that the Taliban want and how can a negotiation take place? It is a very complicated process. It's a very sensitive process, one that has to question the legitimacy of the Afghan government if the United States is to go with a bilateral peace agreement with the Taliban. So there are a lot of, desires out there for this conflict to end, but how this gonna end is basically unclear, and who will take the initiative is unclear.
Now, Taliban is not the only group that is causing problems for want of one side of the argument or of the, there are others, right?
Yes, the Islamic State group, the Khorasan branch, as it's called, is very active in Afghanistan, although we see ISIS on the decline in the Middle East. In Afghanistan, actually, the attacks perpetrated by this group has actually increased. Now, 25% of all the civilian casualties that United Nations has reported is actually attributed to ISIS. And ISIS has also vowed that they will disrupt this process, that they will kill as many voters and candidates as they can. And in fact, just 2 weeks ago, they perpetrated a large-scale attack in the east of the country where they killed one candidate and several of their supporters. So it's not just the Taliban that's causing the problem in Afghanistan and disrupting the electoral process. There are ISIS, there is Al-Qaeda, and there are other terrorist groups that also have the same agenda.
What do you expect to see on Election Day?
Unlike the expectations that over 8 million people will turn out to vote, I think there will be far fewer people turning out to vote, particularly in the south of the country where the Taliban have an upper hand and already have terrorized the people. So there will be far few people turning out, and that will be the likely result.
Akmal Dawi of the VOA Afghanistan service, I thank you so much for giving us some of your time today, and hopefully we can speak again after the election next week, okay?
I look forward to that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The face of politics in Afghanistan is changing. That story is coming your way here on VOA Asia. These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voaasia.com. The U.S. State Department has welcomed Vietnam's release of the dissident blogger known as Mother Mushroom. India's junior foreign minister resigns following allegations by more than a dozen women journalists of sexual harassment when he was the editor of prominent newspapers there. At least two militants were killed in a gun battle with government forces in the disputed region of Indian Kashmir Wednesday. U.S. Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell says tariffs hurt and calls for progress in trade. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. VOA Asia report continues now. The majority of the candidates running in Afghanistan's parliamentary elections on Saturday are considered young. Several of them are in their 20s or 30s. VOA's Aisha Tanzim takes a look at how this may change Afghan politics.
With only a few days to go before the parliamentary elections, Kabul is plastered with banners and posters. More than 800 candidates are competing in the capital. Across the country, more than 2,500 are running. All this electioneering costs money, a lot of money. There is a legal limit on how much a candidate can spend, depending on the population and size of each constituency. But few are following the law.
We have the reports that some of the candidates cross the limit even before they start from the campaign period. And according to the reports that we receive from our observers in different provinces and in Kabul, maybe some candidates will expend around 100,000, even more than that. And it's a completely violence of the procedures by some of the candidates.
Independent observers say people who are spending this kind of money are likely to want to make it back. The common perception locally is that many will try to get government contracts or support policies favorable to their businesses. Afghan voters are on guard in this nation ranked by Transparency International as one of the top five most corrupt in the world.
About rich candidates, we have the rich people who had a lot of money but never served the people. This time, we will not consider the wealth of the candidates when voting. We will vote for those who are most capable.
But candidates who say they are capable argue they don't have the funding to reach voters. Their rich opponents are filling the airwaves and every street corner with their signs. Some wealthy politicians have even resorted to bribing the voters, according to the Free and Fair Election Forum of Afghanistan. Election monitors are reporting rates of up to $100 a vote in some areas. For poor Afghans, that is a lot of money.
Many people wonder if a parliament full of rich people who can afford to spend $50,000 to $100,000 or more on an election campaign can represent the interests of a population, most of which makes only a few hundred dollars a year. Aisha Tanzeem, VOA News, Kabul.
Happening now in Asia, U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis plans to meet Thursday in Singapore with his Chinese counterpart amid escalating tensions over China's purchase of Russian fighter planes and missiles, as well as ongoing friction in the South China Sea. Meeting comes just weeks after the talks planned for Beijing fell apart. Stay up to date with VOA. This is VOA Asia. Pro-independence organizers with the group Formosa Alliance are planning a mass rally in Taiwan's capital of Taipei this coming Saturday, just weeks before local elections that are seen as a key test of the two-year administration of independence-leaning President Tsai Ing-wen and her Democratic Progressive Party. Planners hope to pressure lawmakers to allow the Taiwan people to vote in a referendum on independence, a red line for mainland China, which views Taiwan as part of its territory. Joseph Cheng is a retired political science professor at Hong Kong City University. He told VOA's Victor Beatty it's another sign of strained cross-state relationships. Make that cross-strait relationship since the Tsai government took power in 2016 and has refused to accept the One China principle along with the 1992 consensus. It stipulates that both sides agree there is only one China. Cheng said the people of Taiwan resent Beijing's efforts to apply political and diplomatic pressure.
So these pressures probably have increased the resentment on the part of the Taiwan people who tend to advocate independence, who do not believe in reunification and better relations with Beijing. It is expected that such a rally will further adversely affect cross-strait relations. This explains why the Tsai Ing-wen administration refuses to endorse this rally, and a rally of this kind may certainly give rise to further excuses on the part of the Chinese authorities to exert further pressure on Taiwan. As we know, in November, there will be important local elections to be held in the island state. The rally certainly represents the attempts of the more radical wing of the political parties in Taiwan to secure attention to their platform and to mobilize the supporters to support their political platforms and candidates.
President Tsai Ing-wen's ruling Democratic Progressive Party, the DPP, is, I believe, traditionally known as independence-leaning, but President Tsai has said she wants to maintain the status quo with China, but there are some independence campaigners who see a sense of urgency for their cause as the DPP holds the leadership and a parliamentary majority for the first time. Is this a good time for those supporting independence to push forward with their plan?
Such a rally will not help the cause of the Democratic Progressive Party in the local elections. The Taiwan administration understands very well that while it refuses to endorse the One China principle and the 1992 consensus, it will not try to provoke Beijing. It will still try to maintain the status quo because the economy of Taiwan is very, very dependent on good relations across the straits, and any attempts to disrupt cross-strait relations will certainly attract the opposition from the business community, and this is unwise in the local elections campaign period.
At the same time, you probably are aware that there's a referendum that's going to take place next month that asks for the island to compete in international sporting events like the upcoming Olympics as Taiwan and not under the banner of Chinese Taipei.
The referendum Again, it's a half-hearted measure on the part of the Tsai Ing-wen administration to respond to those who are unhappy with the pressures from Beijing. Any referendum touching the issue of independence or complete autonomy certainly will be seen crossing the red line set by Beijing.
If the matter results in a referendum on November 2nd, 25% of eligible voters say yes, and there are more yes votes than no votes, the government will be obligated to draft a bill for consideration by Parliament. Supporters want Taiwan athletes to compete in the 2020 Tokyo Olympics under the banner Taiwan. Beijing has called that a flagrant challenge of the Olympic model, a reference to a 1981 agreement between the mainland and the International Olympic Committee that while Taiwan is allowed to compete, it must do so as Chinese Taipei. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Special English, a way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Right-wing Hindu groups attacked women journalists at an Indian hill temple on Wednesday, trying to prevent women of menstrual age entering for the first time in centuries. That despite the presence of hundreds of police officers. Visit VOA Asia Facebook every day for top stories and great features to see and share. This is VOA Asia. Britain's Prince Harry will open the Invictus Games in Australia this weekend. The competition for injured servicemen and women, along with veterans, will attract 500 athletes from 18 countries. Phil Mercer reports from Sydney.
Invictus means unconquered or undefeated in Latin. It's the name given to a Paralympic-style event co-founded in 2014 by Britain's Prince Harry, who served in the army for 10 years and went on two tours of Afghanistan. The prince was inspired after he attended a similar event for wounded veterans in the United States. There have been three Invictus Games so far, in London in 2014, Orlando in Florida in 2016, and Toronto in Canada in 2017. The fourth installment starts Saturday in Sydney. The event will officially be opened by Prince Harry, who's arrived in Australia on a royal tour.
I'm particularly grateful to the Australian government for hosting the Invictus Games, which the whole country has embraced with great enthusiasm. Thank you so much for all of the support. Australia is, of course, home to some of the world's best sporting talent, but what you are about to see during these Invictus Games will quite literally astound you. A demonstration of the power of the human spirit, the power of sport to change lives.
The Games bring together hundreds of athletes from 18 countries who are all military allies, including Afghanistan, France, Iraq, the United Kingdom, and the United States. Former Australian commando Gary Robinson was in a Black Hawk helicopter when it crashed in 2010 in enemy territory in Afghanistan. He suffered a severe brain injury and a fractured lower spine. His left leg was later amputated below the knee. He's now competing in his fourth Invictus Games.
I'm very honoured and very proud. I've always said to my therapist, I can't wait till the day comes that Invictus does come to Australia. So I know it has saved my life. And to be able to be supported and acknowledged by my home countrymen, for me, would be the pinnacle of my recovery. You will see me competing in cycling, archery and swimming.
Many of the events will be hosted at the same venues used for the 2000 Olympics in Sydney. They include athletics, sitting volleyball, wheelchair basketball and powerlifting. The sailing and road cycling competitions will take place in and around Sydney Harbour. The Invictus Games run from October 20 to 27. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This news alert from VOA Asia. The chair of a United Nations inquiry that accused Myanmar's military of genocide is likely to brief the Security Council this month after Britain, France, the United States, and six other members requested the meeting. That according to diplomats. Make sure you check all the big stories at VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. This year's UN State of the World Population Report finds a global trend towards smaller families. The report says family size is closely linked with reproductive rights and the ability to choose the number of children people wish to have. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The report finds people in developed countries tend to have lower fertility rates than those in developing countries. This is because they generally have greater access to family planning services, modern contraceptives, and age-appropriate sex education. The director of the UN Population Fund office in Geneva, Monica Farrell, says in places where reproductive rights are constrained, either due to lack of resources or government mandates, people have a limited ability to choose the size of their families.
Many sub-Saharan African countries, for example, have fertility rates of 4 or more births per woman. At the other end of the spectrum, you have some Eastern Asian and European countries with fewer than 2 births per woman. In both cases, individuals face obstacles to the full realization of their reproductive rights.
The world population is expected to increase by 2.5 billion by 2050 to nearly 10 billion people. Farrell says sub-Saharan Africa is expected to contribute more than half of that growth. She tells VOA women in Africa have to overcome many legal and social barriers to achieve control of their fertility.
Women may not have the access to medical services, may not have the access to childcare, may not have access to all the institutional and social support that comes with being ready or being able to plan your fertility.
To make freedom of choice a reality, the report urges countries to offer universal access to quality reproductive health care, including modern contraceptives, and ensure better education. It also advocates for a change in men's attitude toward a woman's right to choose the number, timing, and spacing of children. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
One of the longest-running television shows, not only in the United States, but around the world, is facing a big change.
Let's take a break, Elmo.
Take a break? Well, why, Big Bird?
Well, I'm tired, Elmo. We've been playing tag all morning.
But Elmo's having fun, Big Bird.
Me too, but taking a break is fun, too.
The puppeteer who has played Big Bird on Sesame Street is retiring after nearly 50 years on the show. Carol Spinney announced his statement Wednesday that he's handing over Big Bird and his other character, Oscar the Grouch, to younger performers. Spinney says the physical requirements of performing in the characters have become difficult. He developed problems with his balance. He stopped doing the puppeteering for Big Bird in 2015 and now only provides the voices for him and Oscar. His apprentice, Matt Vogel, will succeed him in the Big Bird role. Vogel also plays Kermit the Frog.
I'm taking a break, taking a rest, taking some time to be at my best. Oh, won't you take a break? Won't you take a break with me?
Big Bird almost still wants to play.
We can read a book.
But reading a book is nice.
Or look up at the sky.
Yeah, the sky.
We can take the time.
Take the time?
To let the world go by. I'm taking a moment.
Taking a few.
Taking whatever it takes to feel new.
Oh,
won't you take a break? Won't you take a break?
You have been listening to VOA Asia. You can get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud, download our podcast, take VOA Asia with you. Find us at voanews.com and let's hear from you. VOA Asia Facebook and our email, voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Greg Burns, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Skylar Ogden, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melbourne in Washington. Have a great day.